WZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Two employees have died following an explosion at a factory in Louisville, Kentucky. The plant partially collapsed in the blast and blew out windows in nearby homes and businesses. Several other people were hurt.
There were a fair amount of burn injuries, a pretty significant amount of blast injuries as well, from the penetrating and blunt injuries from the force of the explosion, as well as some crush injuries where some debris had fallen on the patient.
That's Dr. Jason Smith at the University of Louisville Hospital. The cause of the explosion is still under investigation. President-elect Donald Trump tapping more than a dozen appointees so far to hold key positions in his upcoming administration. They include Elon Musk and former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy to head up a new department focused on eliminating government waste. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressing NATO leaders in Brussels this morning, saying that the U.S. will continue providing its current level of aid to Ukraine during President Biden's final months in office. This is ABC News. Incidents of anti-Semitism jumping sharply. Here's ABC's Lana Moise.
The Anti-Defamation League reports a 300% increase in anti-Semitic incidents in Chicago alone over the last year. Nationwide, more than 10,000 anti-Semitic incidents have been reported since the Hamas attack on Israel last October, an increase of 200%. Cases also spiking overseas.
Especially in Amsterdam after Jewish people were attacked following a recent soccer game. ABC News foreign correspondent James Longman.
There's been a partial state of emergency declared in Amsterdam. So they're hoping that this doesn't, you know, keep going. But every night there's been something. And there is a sense that violence could hit any night.
And several people arrested in anti-Israel protests there over the last few days. KFC going to court over two words, original recipe. It is suing another chicken place, Church's Texas Chicken, for using the same phrase. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Beyonce might have been disappointed with her response from the Country Music Awards, but when it comes to Grammy nominations, she's at the top. Variety reports that Beyonce has been nominated for 11 Grammys, including Artist, Song, and Album of the Year for Cowboy Carter. Not far behind are some other heavy hitters, including, you guessed it, Taylor Swift, Sabrina Carpenter, Billie Eilish, and new kid on the block, Chappell Roan. Roan and Carpenter also up for Best New Artist of the Year. Looks like I got shut out again. Taylor Sheridan apparently decided he does not have enough shows on TV, so he is teaming up with Blake Shelton for a new music reality show. The Road will follow a big-time music star around the country in search of the next big musical talent. Deadline reports competing artists will have the opportunity to open for an A-lister in various towns to win over crowds. The music superstar who will lead the search has not yet been revealed. The Road will launch in the fall of 2025 on CBS. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Bucks take down the Raptors. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, Milwaukee with a 99-85 win over the struggling Raptors. Giannis with 23 points. Bobby Portis, 17. No Damian Lillard in the concussion protocol. So point guard Ryan Rollins stepped in with 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Doc Rivers.
He's a terrific shooter. The thing I kept saying in the timeout, keep shooting, keep shooting.
The Bucks host the Pistons tonight. NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Bears Sunday at Soldier Field. Green Bay has a 10-game winning winning streak over Chicago, the longest of its kind in the league. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers will welcome back Bo Ryan and the 2014 and 15 teams that he led to the Final Four when they play number 9th ranked Arizona at the Kohl Center Friday night.
Excited to have who's coming back from those two teams, and then to have an opportunity to recognize Coach Ryan, put his name in the rafters where it belongs. So preparation for Arizona will unfold.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today with a few scattered showers by later this afternoon. High today 45. The wind will gradually die down here by mid to late afternoon. Tonight 36. Tomorrow a few sprinkles, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 40s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk to Angela Lang from BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing Communities. A little weather and wine with Brittany Merlot in hour number two. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
the sun is out. I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
We take a walk. The sun is shining down. Burns my feet as they touch the ground.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Then we lie beneath a shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Civic Media Mornings. My name is Greg Bach. We are sitting in for Pat Kreitlow, who is on vacation right now. Had a bit of technical difficulties this morning. We welcome you here, and we welcome back Matt Rothschild. Matt, can you hear me?
I can, Greg.
There you go.
And so I want to apologize to the listeners for this technical difficulty and welcome you back to Civic Media Mornings.
All right. Just to let you know, Matt, we've got Harvey K on the phone for you. So we're ready to do that if you'd like.
Sure. Let's get Harvey K on there. Harvey K is a professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. If he's still teaching there, I got to ask him about that. He's the author of some great books, including The American Radical, Are We Good Citizens?, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, and The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. Harvey K., welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I was expecting a totally different technology, but if you can hear me, so much the better. And the only thing I would correct is that I'm Professor Emeritus. When the pandemic struck, I decided that as much as I like doing things in groups online and shows online, I did not want to be lecturing to 50 to 150 students online. So I took a retirement. So that's 4 years ago.
There you go. You enjoying your retirement?
Yeah. The first couple of years were incredibly busy doing, it seemed like I was doing somebody's podcast show almost every single day. That's quieted down, but I've actually developed a new thing this past year. I was on a show with cartoonist or comic book creator Matt Strackbine, a.k.a. the Letter Hack, who lives down in South Carolina. And he was talking to me about a variety of the books that I had written. And he said, you know, it would be fun if we could take some of your stuff and turn them into comics. So we've actually produced a series of comic strips that we've posted at Common Dreams. And if anyone gets a chance, just go to commondreams.org. Type in Harvey J.K. and you'll see a bunch of articles and comic strips come up, one of which actually deals with the kinds of things we might be getting to today, the question of an economic bill of rights, and what would FDR do in the face of the threat of fascism, or what did he do in the face of the threat of fascism. So this past year, I've been busy thinking about turning my arguments into visual images, I guess.
Well, that's great to be able to repurpose your stuff. I'm all for that. Well, why don't we pick the conversation up where you put it on the table, which is, how did FDR combat fascism?
Well, it's pretty clear. I mean, first of all, we should remember the dates. He was governor of New York in the late 1920s into the very early 1930s, and he was always eager for a chance to run for president, which seemed not likely once he had been stricken with polio, but he was still determined that he was going to transcend the wheelchair in many ways. In 1930, he wrote to a friend who was the leading figure on questions of social welfare in America, and he said, "I think it's time for this country to go radical, or fairly radical, for at least a generation." What led him to say that? Well, it was the fact that fascism had triumphed in Italy with Mussolini, and he imagined other parts of Europe were going to be threatened by a similar kind of authoritarianism, as well as the fact that, in his mind, Soviet communism was clearly authoritarian, would later be called totalitarian, and he thought it was imperative that the United States, that Americans recall and remember what it was that saved the American promise historically, which to his mind was Americans had gone radical. They turned a rebellion, with the words of Thomas Paine, during the 1770s into a revolution for independence and the making of a democratic republic. In the 1860s, led by Lincoln, they not only fought a civil war, but in the course of doing so, brought an end to slavery. And as a consequence, the American promise was renewed. Whatever happened thereafter was not Lincoln's fault. And then, in Roosevelt's mind, if the United States is in the midst of a Great Depression and fascism was a possibility, in fact, there were leading figures who acted, including the editors of Vanity Fair magazine, who wondered if we needed a Mussolini to get us out of the Great Depression. But FDR utterly rejected that and knew that the only way you can save democracy is by radically enhancing it. So in 1932, when he ran for president, he laid out a series of initiatives that would both tap the working abilities of the masses of unemployed, but also empower them with such things as Social Security, and empower them with the right to organize labor, that kind of thing. And when he became president, we all know that he instituted, with the Democratic Congress and the support of working people, a New Deal, as he called it. And as a consequence, the prospects of fascism did not only seriously decline, however much others might have said, well, FDR is acting like a fascist, you know, the far right was accusing him of that. The fact is that he saved democracy with the labor movement by radically enhancing American democratic life. And I could lay out examples. For example, he indeed signed into law the National Labor Relations Act, which empowered the creation of a National Labor Relations Board, whose job was not to mediate between labor and capital, but to stand behind labor as it sought to organize workplaces. He did sign into law something he had fought up for quite a time, the Social Security Act, which enabled...
Hey, Harvey, we got to take a break. Please stand by and join us right after this break, and we'll continue how we radically enhance democracy and beat fascism. You're listening to the Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild. At Kreitler, we'll be back.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. Today, I want to talk about a couple of things to keep in mind when you're between jobs or when money is scarce. Number one is a reminder that most of us are already tracking. As best you can, only use credit in emergencies. You know, like a medical emergency or when your only car breaks down. Try your best not to use them for everyday type expenses. That could cost you a lot more over time. Now, number two, if you know you're going to have a hard time paying your creditors, talk to them right away. You know, have those conversations before you fall behind on your bills. They might accept a partial payment. They might be willing to work out some other arrangement with you while you're in a tough spot. And yeah, nobody likes having those conversations, but it's better than the stress of avoiding creditors later. That's today's Work Money Minute. For more everyday money tips, check out Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. What's the best way, do you think, it is to approach a difference in not just opinion, but in what we perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
First, having a conversation. Try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions at the state level or at the local level where there can be progress.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild, your guest host for today and tomorrow, because Pat Kreitlow's off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. I'm happy to have Harvey Kay hanging around this morning. He is the Emeritus Professor of Democracy and Justice Studies up at UW-Green Bay, author of some incredible works, including Thomas Paine and the Promise of America and the Fight for the Four Freedoms, what made FDR in the greatest generation, truly great. Harvey, I have a question for you. I mean, you talked about people during FDR's day saying we needed our own Mussolini, and it looks like we have our own Mussolini today. I used to call him Trumpolini, and it's just not funny anymore.
No, really. No. So, that was a nervous laughter on my part.
Yeah. What did you make of his victory?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. In 2016, I lied to a lot of people to reassure them and said that he would not win. This time, when people asked, I said, I have no idea, really no idea. Because, first of all, the Democrats waited too long to push Biden to not declare his campaign, okay? Number one. Number two, the campaign that Kamala Harris was running, whatever the vibes, as they, you know, asserted, the fact was that she just was not reaching the kinds of working people that she really needed to appeal to. And it didn't help that when she came to places like Wisconsin, she was accompanied by Liz Cheney. In the short term, I really did think the Democrats could lose, in good part because they had waited too long to find themselves a new candidate. And when they did find the new candidate, however exciting it seemed at the Democratic convention, they came out of the convention and basically took the same kind of road they had taken before, a kind of centrist road. And one would have hoped that they would have learned from Bernie and Trump, if one recalls what Trump did back in 2016, say that if you're going to win in America, you've got to not simply tap in to people's, if you like, needs and desires, you've got to point out to them what it is that's oppressing them, what it is that's keeping their wages low. You point a finger, as Bernie did, at the billionaires. And when Kamala took to the road, she basically followed the advice of her brother-in-law, who was an attorney for Uber, and basically, you know, did what Biden did. He said, things aren't going to fundamentally change. You know, they offered some policies, but some of the policies were absolutely schizophrenic. So, yeah, so that was a terrible campaign, ultimately. So I really did worry. And, of course, Trump won. In the larger historical perspective, the Democratic Party has failed the very folks that empowered FDR back in the 1930s. The FDR presidency, which lasted 12 years. I mean, he was elected to office four times. He passed away early in his fourth term. Really did depend on an intimate tie to labor, okay? And what we've seen now for 50 years, or we have had seen for 50 years, is not simply a class war by the corporate rich, conservatives, and neoliberals. And neoliberals often refers to Democrats.
Bill Clinton, for instance, and NAFTA.
Right. Carter, Clinton, and actually Obama as well. OK, neoliberalism prevailed in the White House. And it really was the case. It became very evident under Carter and especially under Clinton that the Democrats were turning their backs on the labor movement. And I could detail that, but probably don't need to. I think a lot of people know about what I know about it. But the thing is that 50 years of neoliberal politics, Republican or Democratic, has seen the working people in this country not secure a significant rise in their incomes in 50 years. The first 50 years are basically, it was a class war. And moreover, it was a class war directed against the very democratic achievements that workers, women, and people of color had secured between the 1930s and the 1960s. So it was a war on a whole generation's achievements. And the Democrats, for the past 50 years, had turned their backs on fighting that class war and embracing, you know, the politics and economics of neoliberalism. So, you know, I guess I'm not surprised. I'm devastated, you know, in many emotionally and intellectually, but I'm not actually shocked by what happened.
No, and you mentioned the Liz Cheney gambit, and you know, my son, who's 35 and working at a co-op here, said, "Wow, what are they doing to Liz Cheney? They're just going to turn a whole bunch of people off." And Dick Cheney, I mean, no one at the base, progressive base, is going to get excited about that. The theory was that Liz Cheney was going to bring moderate Republican women or independent women over to Kamala Harris, but I don't know that there's any evidence that that happened. In the meantime,
yeah,
they turned off young people.
They turned off young people. And at least this morning, I saw a piece by John Nichols quickly online in which he says that in the places that Liz Cheney visited with Harris took Cheney along, it actually cost her votes among some of the very people that they really needed to appeal to, who were not necessarily Republicans, but who are independents. I mean, basically, independents are numerous, right? So, yeah, no, I mean, you know, this is interesting to me. I've said this many times in many ways, but I've really come to believe that basically the political elites in this country and the Democratic elites at our expense have come to believe that working people have no memory, that they just don't have a memory. They completely fail to consider that the consequences of neoliberalism, working people had to live with and have had to live with every single day. They've seen communities in decline. They've seen their wages and incomes, you know, go down or at least not keep pace. So basically, even if they couldn't give us the political history of the kinds of things I'm talking about, it is the case that they did not forget that when Hillary Clinton ran for president, she was a Clinton. And Clinton had basically screwed them in the 90s. Okay. And similarly, Biden, they may not know the details, but Biden was a leading neoliberal in the US Senate. So expectations on my part, at least, were low. And rather surprisingly, he did more than I would ever have expected.
Harvey, I hope you'll stay with me for the last segment we have at the end of the next half hour. I've got a guest coming on at the break here, but I'd love to carry on the conversation if we could. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for Pat Kreitlow, who's off this week. We'll be back on Monday. I hope you'll be back in just a minute.
Water make the river, watch the mountain fire, make the sunlight turn the world around. Heart is of the river, body is the mountain, spirit is the sunlight, turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report, along with you on a Wednesday, reporting from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. As winter approaches, Wisconsin farmers are preparing for a season of uncertainty. Fluctuating weather patterns are in the forecast, but growers can expect a wet winter. We've got a state climatologist joining us in just a moment.
With over 60 years of experience in the auction business, Steffes Group is the trusted source for buying high-quality equipment. From farm and construction equipment to transportation and land, Steffes Group auctions feature a diverse selection of assets for whatever your needs may be. Bid with confidence, knowing that Steffes Group's team of professionals prioritize honesty, integrity, and outstanding service. Visit steffesgroup.com to view their upcoming auctions and start bidding on the equipment you need today.
State climatologist Steve Vavris joins us. He says this winter will likely be wetter than normal. He hasn't quite been able to nail down the temperature expectations.
The latest forecast or outlook is showing from NOAA, National Weather Service, is no real indication in terms of temperature, whether it will be unusually warm or unusually cold. They're saying equal chances of a warm, cold, or near normal winter. So that doesn't give as much to go by. On the other hand, it is indicating that for the Great Lakes states, including Wisconsin, that chances are elevated for a wet winter. And that's especially true in the eastern half of Wisconsin. That could mean more snow. It could mean more rain. It could mean more rain and snow. It just depends on what the temperatures are like coming up.
Steve Vavris, along with us, Wisconsin's state climatologist. I've got more agribusiness news coming your way.
At CHS, we know what it takes to feed and fuel the world, to integrate a global ag and energy supply chain, to advocate for farmers in their fields and around the world, to build communities, invest in rural America, and empower rural economies. It takes courage, conviction, commitment. It takes the nation's leading farmer-owned cooperative. It takes a co-op. It takes CHS.
Here's what's happening in agribusiness news on a Wednesday. Wisconsin is getting more than $3.5 million from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to strengthen fertilizer production. Bentley Farms in Shawano County is a recipient. They'll be using the money to implement a nutrient concentration system. This will transform manure waste into organic fertilizer. Once operational, the system is projected to make nearly 40 million gallons of organic fertilizer annually. From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy and breezy today with a few scattered showers by later this afternoon. High today 45. The wind will gradually die down here by mid to late afternoon. Tonight 36. Tomorrow a few sprinkles, mostly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 40s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why the Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Bob's Burgers writer John Schrader, an actor and creator of the first annual Milwaukee Independent Film Awards, Ezekiel Drews. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Good morning. Matt Rothschild here pitching in for Pat Kreitlow, who's off this week. He's on vacation. He'll be back on Monday with his Up North News Radio. Welcome to the Civic Media Mornings. Matt Rothschild, former editor of the Progressive Magazine, and I used to be over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, too. Now I'm delighted to have with us, joining the conversation, Angela Stroud. Winner of the 73rd Assembly seat way up in the northwest corner of Wisconsin, containing Superior, Bayfield, Washburn, and Ashland. Angela Stroud, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, congratulations on your win. That must have been thrilling.
It was very exciting. A rough night for Democrats. So it was a mixed bag for sure. But I'm, a week later now, I'm kind of dealt with the emotions, and I am super excited to get to work.
Well, deal with those emotions a little more, the fact that Trump won again. I know I've had a hard time wrestling with it. How do you come to terms with it?
You know, after some time thinking about what went right and what went wrong in this campaign, I think we continue as a national party to kind of struggle with a consistent, clear economic message. And it sounds like, you know, from the analysis I'm hearing and just my own observation of the campaign, I think that's the most sort of compelling explanation for what went wrong. And, you know, the thing about Trump is he doesn't have to offer an alternative set of policies. He sort of embodies to many people this idea of the non-elite, which is ironic, of course. But that's the role he's played since he came on the scene in 2016. Unfortunately, he just happened to be on the ticket at a time when voters just didn't resonate with what was being offered on the Democratic side.
Yeah, I think people are just sick of politics as usual and politicians as usual. That's why Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have been two of the most popular political figures over the last 10 years. And, you know, I felt bad for Kamala Harris because I thought she, you know, she worked her tail off and, you know, did great in the debate. Yes, yeah, she had some tactical errors and some substantive errors, as Harvey Kay was talking about, in a similar way that you are now, not addressing the real economic circumstances of people as fully as she might have. You know, she had some breaks for Wall Street in there at the same time that she was, you know, talking about, you know, building housing for people and lowering the cost of groceries and rent, which was nice to hear. But the other side of it was kind of odd and peculiar. And so I do think there was some cognitive dissonance there. I had fooled myself that she might win. And, you know, while I wasn't surprised, it was just a devastating blow. And so we do need to recover. But one of the bright spots was your win up there, because Democrats and progressives had been unrepresented in the Bayfield, Washburn, Ashland area. Because of the rigged maps. And now we got fairer maps, and lo and behold, you won. To what extent did the fair maps movement help pave the way for your victory?
I mean, there's no doubt I wouldn't be in the seat today if it wasn't for the fair maps. But, you know, prior to 2022, we had two assembly reps up here because of how the districts were drawn, who were Democrats. Superior was the most gerrymandered district in the entire state. And so we kind of traded a 2-for-1 in these maps. On the one hand, you know, we picked up one, but on the other hand, this is a bluer area than a lot of people realize. And right. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the shape of this district, Superior to Bad River. It's almost the entire south shore of Lake Superior in the state. And that matters because that allows us to really think about what it means to be the Lake Superior district, protecting the lake being the number one issue that people up here talk about. And so, I'm, you know, on the one hand, I'm bummed that we have one fewer rep than we've had historically up here. And on the other, the shape of this district is really meaningful, and it's going to allow us to be, I think, more proactive in protecting the lake than we've been able to be in the past.
Speaking with Angela Stroud, newly elected to the 73rd Assembly seat. Yeah, I saw on your website that protecting the Lake Superior watershed was one of your top issues. What needs to be done to protect the watershed there?
There are a range of things. I mean, we need to think about the toxins that are getting into the lake, PFAS being, you know, top of mind for a lot of people, but other toxins too. And we need to think about how are they getting in and then regulating them. I mean, when you sit on the shores of 10% of the world's fresh water, you have to take that responsibility seriously. And then we also have, you know, petroleum infrastructure along the lakeshore that we need to be thoughtful about. And, you know, are those projects worth the risk to our clean water? So we have NTEC and Superior, Line 5 out in Bad River. Well, Line 5 runs from Superior all the way to Bad River, to be clear. But it's been a legal battle in Bad River. And so those are a few that come to mind. But any threats to the watershed, we need to be really proactive about.
And did you oppose Line 5?
You know, I don't think of it in such a basic way as I'm in favor or oppose. I mean, it's a pipeline. So do I oppose pipelines generally? You know, they serve a critical purpose as so long as we rely on petroleum. What I support is tribal sovereignty. And so I back the tribes on their positions. You know, they've tried to kick Enbridge out of their reservation. Enbridge is still trespassing. There's a reroute that's proposed that fundamentally doesn't solve the problem, because when we recognize treaty rights aren't just about on and off reservation, it's about ceded territory, which is the whole northern lands. And so we have to be extremely thoughtful about the impact of a pipeline in ceded territory that's right on the banks of Lake Superior and in the watershed.
You also ran on another issue that I think some Democrats who succeeded also elevated, and that's the issue of public schools. Did that resonate when you were knocking on doors?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it did for every representative, every candidate, and every district, no matter Democrat or Republican. I mean, public schools are the heart of communities. People know it. And so every door I knocked, you know,